Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
And when I realized that, I cut it back by 95%. And I've apologized and asked for forgiveness. I've met with black leaders to try to get an understanding of how I can better position myself.
At last night's Democratic debate, it seems like each of the candidates were talking to and about the black vote, each crafting answers to touch on the issues that impact the most diverse primary state so far. Tonight, we're going to discuss the debate, what the candidates were trying to tell black voters in South Carolina. But we begin with Melanie Campbell, president and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. She was at the South Carolina debate last night. Melanie, the big news is the endorsement of Joe Biden by Majority Whip and South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn this morning. Does that hold sway for the voters there? What do you think?
Hey, Harold. Hi. We'll get some clarity. I was not at the debate last night. I was at the forum this morning that Reverend Sharpton hosted with six out of the seven candidates.
Okay, so talk to me about that. What do you think?
And so those everyone showed up there except for Bloomberg. So
okay.
Everybody was there that was there last night. Yeah. I was traveling here last night. That sucked. So didn't make the debate.
So what do you think, Melanie? What do you think about what happened last night?
Oh, yeah, I did. Of course, I watched it, watched what happened. I think that, well, a couple of things. One, and the feedback that I was at a minister's breakfast that National Action Network hosted, so hearing from folks from South Carolina, honestly, the black folks that I talked to were a little bit taken aback because they were going at each other. That was concerning. But then I also heard from people that they felt different candidates did better than they had people like Joe Biden, Vice President of Biden. Folks felt that the Democrats were really kind of attacking each other in a way that turned some people off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it came to the issues important to black voters, who was spot on and who missed the mark, in your opinion?
I don't know that anybody was quote-unquote spot on, but I think that from what I heard today and then what I heard about last night, Joe Biden was still did well. Senator Warren, other than her kind of going after Bloomberg the way she did, and Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders and Joe Biden, from the feedback I got and even what I heard today listening to them talk at the minister's breakfast, seemed to be had a stronger message. Senator Warren to Senator Sanders today, I think, really laid out better issues that impact our community, issues of justice. All of them talk about issues of justice and that impact black folks, whether they were talking about criminal justice reform or they were talking about economic inequality and economic justice issues. Everyone had a way of bringing up those issues, voting rights, concerns. And so listening to today, you wanted to see, okay, who's like just checking off a box or who's really had more command of our issues.
I see.
And that's what I vote myself on a personal level. I vote on Tuesday because I live in Virginia.
Okay.
So I was also personally listening to make my mind up, which I have not done, on who I'm going to vote for on Tuesday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Melanie Campbell, President and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, thank you so much. Joining me now to discuss this issue further are Dr. Clarence Lussain, political science professor at Howard University, Eva McKinn, congressional correspondent with Spectrum Networks. We're also going to be joined later by Rena Shaw, our conservative commentator and founder of the Women's Public Leadership Network. Lines are open. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Let's go first to the top of the conversation and talk about Jim Clyburn. Eva, you have you take issue with the use of the term kingmaker, which has been floating around for the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 days now in anticipation that Clyburn was going to announce his endorsement.
That's right. With all due respect to Congressman Clyburn, there was a lot of, as you said, anticipation and excitement from former Vice President Biden's camp about this endorsement. We very much knew this was coming, and it was critical for the Vice President, who has lost all of the races thus far, to receive this endorsement. But this idea of one person as a kingmaker, one person as sort of as the barometer or the definition of what's to come, I think is really problematic, especially in this day and age in 2020. I thought about former New York Congressman Joseph Crowley in Queens, and Congressman AOC's great upset there. And everyone used to call Congressman Crowley a kingmaker. So I think that we should think about how we frame these things. How do we frame endorsements? Do we put too much weight into them? And why are we still using terms like kingmaker in 2020?
Do you think, Dr. Lusain, that the endorsement matters, this particular one?
I don't think it changes the game. I think I agree with the comments. Kingmakers simply do not really work. And if we're looking at endorsements, what we're seeing is that all of the candidates are touting their black endorsements. You look at Elizabeth Warren, she has an endorsement from Yana Presley. You look at Bloomberg, he has an endorsement from a wide number of black mayors, including the mayor of Washington, D.C.
And the former mayor of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake.
And so you just see a lot of split among black elected officials, both at the mayoral level as well as at the congressional level. So no one endorsement is going to have an impact. No one's waiting to hear that one candidate is going to be determined by an endorsement they get. Now, the value of the endorsements, I think, are that it gives some degree of legitimacy to a campaign, and that helps with fundraising. So when you go to a donor and you can pull out a list, that gives you a little bit, but that doesn't change the numbers on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Rena Shaw, do you believe that the endorsement of Joe Biden by Jim Clyburn makes any difference at all for black voters?
You know, the very first thing I want to say is black voters are not a monolith. And I think that's what is sort of always missing from the media commentary about the black vote, is that suddenly there's this very respected leader in Congress who makes an endorsement, and everybody's supposedly going to coalesce behind that because it's South Carolina, for example, where Joe Biden has spent a lot of time, a lot of resources. People have been talking about this for months now. But the reality is, yeah, it's people are not really entirely sure where to put their vote yet. There's still a really large block of undecided Dem voters, and I think there are more black undecided voters than we know. And so an endorsement by Clyburn, certainly I agree with the other panelists, that we really shouldn't be talking about kingmaker. And while it helps with fundraising, is it the end all be all? I don't fully think so. I think it would be wrong of the Biden camp to think that that would be the one thing that puts them over the top in South Carolina. Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about the stacks and stacks of comments about black issues last night. First and foremost, let's talk about some of the things that Bloomberg said.
And when I realized that, I cut it back by 95%. And I've apologized and asked for forgiveness. I've met with black leaders to try to get an understanding of how I can better position myself.
He was talking about stop and frisk. Every debate, every interview that he has, and there have not been many interviews, but stop and frisk is the very first thing that he is asked about. It is the very first thing that he often talks about. Does this does this impact the black voters, South Carolina or otherwise? We just talked about the mayors of majority African-American cities, although D.C., that's another show, because maybe right. not. But anyway, Eva, your thoughts about that?
Well, this is something that he's never going to be able to divorce from his legacy, despite as much as, you know, he wants to now in the final hour. And I think what makes it even more seemingly inauthentic is how long it took him to disassociate himself with this policy. It wasn't until he was running for president that he sort of begged for forgiveness. And so this will continue to dog him. I think now it's the matter if for black voters, is does this offend them more, or some of the rhetoric that we've seen coming from, if Bloomberg is able to ascend to getting the nomination, I think black voters will have to make the determine of what sort of offends them more, this very harmful policy, this policy that turned out to be very harmful for people of color in New York City, or what we've seen from the Trump administration over the last 4 years.
Rena, what do you think?
I think Bloomberg is an enigma to the black voter. What do you make of a billionaire who sort of jumps right in and already seems to, by national standards, capture attention? And then we talk about stop and frisk. I can't help but think that what would a Mayor Bloomberg be like in the White House? I think he would bring the same standards. I don't think he's learned from the past, and I don't think he really completely cares about communities of color. He seems to be zero-in on Donald Trump. And he thinks he's the best guy to beat Trump. He really doesn't seem to care what communities of color think, what they think of his past records. He hasn't made public amends for anybody he's hurt or anything he's done wrong. And so when you ask about trust, and that's the number one thing we seem to want in a president, the trust that this person not only represents us, but is somebody we can sit beside and sees us as equals. And I just don't think he has it.
Do you believe, Dr. Lussain, that based on what we've seen of Bloomberg and some of these issues, you know, stop and frisk, the NDA with women that worked for his company, that this is a Donald Trump light?
Well, I think Bloomberg is complicated. The stop and frisk program was a racist, full stop. The Bloomberg's resistance to paying the Central Park Five, once they were exonerated, that was racist. So there are lots of evidence there. On the other hand, though, the reason Bloomberg is where he's at and rising is because on the other side, he has spent time on some issues that in certain black communities have been important, particularly on gun violence, where he essentially financed community groups all over the country. And you have people like former basketball star from San Antonio, for example, whose name escaped me at the moment, who's doing commercials for Bloomberg. And you see people like Greg Meeks, Representative Greg Meeks from New York. So Bloomberg isn't a Donald Trump in the sense that Donald Trump in his entire life never did a single charitable event for anybody. Black, white, anybody else. Now, I'm not endorsing Bloomberg at the least, but I think that he can't be dismissed as a Donald Trump clone because there's a very different history, and he's putting the resources in, which clearly are having an impact. If you can spend $500 million on ads, and all of us to see them on our Facebook, you know, you can't turn without seeing an ad. It has an impact.
Indeed, it does. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the black vote and the 2020 presidential election. Are black voters the most coveted during the course of this political campaign? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I don't want to dwell too much on Bloomberg, but I have to bring this issue up. And that is that Michael Bloomberg's commercials have so much President Barack Obama in them, it makes you wonder, who was vice president when Barack Obama was in the White House? Convincing or not, Eva, for African-American voters, as well as other voters who are big fans of what the polls say is right now the most popular president ever?
Well, I don't know if large swaths of the black electorate are going to be moved by commercials alone, but they can't hurt him, right? We see them here, even in the D.C. market, over and over again. And it certainly confuses people.
You think so?
It does. I've heard black elders say, oh, did President Obama endorse Mayor Bloomberg? And, you know, just seeing the ads, just seeing them pictured together. So I don't know how much it moves the needle, but it's definitely an electorate that these candidates are eager to win over. In 2016, black Americans cast 24% of Democratic primary votes. That's significant. And so we're going to see this from Bloomberg, but also from other candidates now in South Carolina and in the days to come.
I need to take a break, but I want both of my other guests to chime in on that issue. And then we're going to hear from our listeners as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The black vote and the 2020 presidential campaign. Is the black vote the big prize? Is the black vote the thing that will turn the table for Democrats or Republicans? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in 15 seconds, and your calls are next.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about the black vote and the 2020 presidential campaign. Is the black vote the most coveted during this campaign season? And what is the message for black voters from the candidates? My guests are Dr. Clarence Hussein, political science professor here at Howard University, Eva McKend, congressional correspondent with Spectrum Networks, and Rena Shaw, conservative commentator and founder of the Women's Public Leadership Network. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to the phone lines, Rena, I'll go back to you and these Michael Bloomberg commercials with President Barack Obama. Your thoughts about them.
No doubt, I think they are confusing to elders. I couldn't agree more with that point. That is what campaigns know that they can do. And they can sort of manipulate minds like that. Let's just put it honestly and openly. Mike Bloomberg is very good at that. His team has been incredibly crafty on social media. They have been running these ads, targeting them towards people they know they can sway the minds of. Now, to your question about the black vote being the most coveted, there is no doubt after Senator Chuck Jones of Alabama became a U.S. senator that the black vote has fascinated political scientists as well as operatives all over the country, because it was black women that led Jones to victory and denied Roy Moore that seat. And it was one of those things where you have to kind of wonder what's behind it. Why is the black vote so reliable? What gets to the end of it? And it's that, you know, here's the thing. People of color, particularly black people, have been oppressed, have been treated in such a way, and we've been discounted. More than anything, there's been a discounting of the vote. And so when you see the rise and you see this electorate sort of come up and look towards people who are genuine, like Joe Biden, I'm not going to hide the fact that this man is more electable than anybody that stood on the Dem stage so far. Because I don't think it should be overshadowed that he's genuine, he's authentic, he hasn't made bucket loads of money because he's been at public service his entire life, and he here in the twilight of his life, is looking to serve again. And now what political scientists say is, well, here's the thing. You want to put one white billionaire against another? Or you want to put one old white man up against another? That's what they're looking for in a matchup to Trump. And so Bloomberg sort of came out of left field when, of course, the media really made it look like Joe Biden was nothing but a gas machine. The reality is Trump is as well. So I really think that, yes, the black vote is certainly being taken seriously this time, but who are they looking for? Who does the black person in South Carolina care about? Is it the same person that the black person in New York cares about? Chances are it's not, because it's not a monolith.
Good point. Real quick, Dr. Lusane, before I go to the phone lines, your thoughts about those commercials.
So when you talk about the black vote, you also have to talk about the generational divide. And I think it's absolutely clear that for older black Americans, Obama is almost godlike. You know, he represented a sea change in the country's history. For younger black voters, and particularly you're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds who were 10, 11, and 12 when Obama got elected, they don't remember it in the same kind of way. And so Obama is not going to carry that kind of weight. Dissing Obama would be a problem, but simply putting Obama in an ad is not going to change and shift younger voters who, as we're seeing, are trending towards Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, more progressive leftist candidates.
Which, you know, I must say, I'm just going to put it out there. You know, my 21-year-old daughter came to see me today, and I was asking her, what did she think? And the first thing that came out of her mouth was, oh, you know, I'm kind of feeling, Bernie Sanders, which is really interesting because he is he's the oldest one. The oldest one there. And yet he has this appeal to younger voters. And to another point, when you're talking about generational divides, as Rena said, when you're talking about old white guys, other than Buttigieg and Klobuchar, everybody up there is what? Retirement age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder.
Go ahead.
I wonder, though, if eventually Senator Sanders will actually speak to older black voters as well. I'm thinking about the language around Cuba, Castro, and Israel. And the way I hear Bernie Sanders speak, that's the way I heard black elders speak growing up in New York City. This reverence for Cuba, this reverence for some of Castro's policies, you know, walking through Harlem and passing by the Teresa Hotel and having elders say, oh, this was the only place that Castro could stay when he came to New York. And so some of these old school progressive policies, we have to remember that black Americans have a very different relationship with these issues than white Americans. And so I wonder if over time more older black Americans will gravitate towards Sanders.
Yes, older black Americans, because they do remember, but the younger ones, and then you start getting into the discussions about, you know, propaganda, misinformation, poor information about history, where you hear about socialism and people think, you know, the Soviet Union. They don't really think about revolution. They don't really think about an equal playing field I think for some people of a certain age, yeah, they get it, but and it may make some of them, you know, uncomfortable. But you know, for the younger folks, and you know, particularly for white voters who may not have the most accurate information, particularly if they watch Fox News or listen to Rush Limbaugh, they may be frightened by this democratic socialist tag. Let me go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Jones, thanks for hanging on. Calling from D.C.
Hello, Ms.
Go right ahead.
Yes, Ms. Jones. Yes, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
So I have a quick question and kind of a comment. So I'm a 55-year-old African-American female, and I thought I was decided on the candidate that I wanted to vote for until early on. I was kind of decided until Bloomberg and Steyer have joined the other candidates. And so now, listening to all of Bloomberg's advertisements and his promises, it takes me back to the category of undecided. But I guess my question is, why was Bloomberg and Steyer allowed to join the other candidates so late?
Ah, okay. Professor.
What you're talking about is in terms of them being allowed on the debate stage. Initially, there were very clear rules that you needed a certain amount of donations and you needed to be at a certain level in the polls. And
right.
Steyer had actually met those qualifications. But
okay.
Bloomberg, because he's fighting pain, could not meet those qualifications, so the DNC changed the rules. Now, that's a problem because it means that people who played by the rules earlier, like
right.
Booker and Harris and Castro, who were forced to basically drop out, now they see the rules were changed. And so, you know, there's some issues around that. But that's why Bloomberg is in the race right now, is because they changed the rules.
But I think the DNC.
Or why he's in the debates.
I think the DNC may have felt like they didn't have a choice because Bloomberg is putting out all of these ads. He's becoming such a part of the conversation. What if he's not participating in the debates, then he's continuing to be in the process and not really be challenged. So it's like he has to be up there so people can actually quiz him on his record.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Ms. Jones. And I will say, Rena, the big test for Bloomberg for diverse for the diverse electorate will not be on Saturday because he's not on the ballot in South Carolina and there's no write-in in South Carolina. It's Super Tuesday, Rena, where we will see whether or not Bloomberg has the right stuff and a mass appeal.
That's right. And that's what he's been counting on from the get-go. It was almost apparent from the time he announced that Super Tuesday is what he set his sights on. He understood the late entry. But he also understood that by bringing this much money to the table, he had a chance to really annihilate his opponent. Has he done it in the way that he probably set out to do? Not at all. His first debate appearance was not a solid one. And he wasn't able to project exactly what people would say is a really solid, strong exterior that could perhaps face Trump. Has that done that? Absolutely. Has surrogates done that? Absolutely. He seems to be getting more and more support by the day. But something should not be discounted here. It's that these debates have a really, really huge role. And I have had a really hard time with it because I just want to put it this way. It's almost as if the Democrats have learned nothing from the Republicans back in 2015 into 2016. It was such a crowded Republican primary, and there were all these debates, and look who emerged. It was Donald Trump. And nobody was ever able to nail him to the fact that he was a former liberal. He had given to so many liberal candidates, Democrats. And
yeah.
So similarly with Bloomberg, people are mentioning that, yes, this man was a former Republican, gave to Republicans, that kind of thing. But again, they're not able to nail him. But the debates are what I really want to get at. I think there are too many, and the field is still very, very crowded. It's a darn shame that the candidates of color, like Castro, Booker, Harris, have all dropped out. I know they feel like this is unfair. And where it stands right now, it's just a funny moment in the primary.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to know which way this is going to go. So Super Tuesday is going to tell us a lot, but is it going to go in the direction that Mike Bloomberg particularly wants? I'm not so sure anymore.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Walter, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Walter. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, Harold. See you in your panel. Hey, I got a couple of comments, and both of them are very troubling to me. Debate last night, you know, they started out tearing out each other, and it just does not show any unity. Somewhere else, like one of your panelists just said, you have to start dropping out. You have to start supporting the leading cause or whoever is going to be the candidate or is leading at the time. And the second thing is that when they start out plugging at Bloomberg and this stop and frisk at the time, Bloomberg has 750 murders in New York, you know. And so, you know, everybody talks about gun violence and buyback programs. Hey, we need stop and frisk in D.C. here because we're getting nightly murders every night and buyback programs, and what we should have is more gun checks and all that. It's just not going to work because they're not going to do anything for us until we do it for ourselves. And these communities need to get off their butts, get out of their feelings, and support some of these kind of harsh decision. But hey, if you want to see some of your grandchildren grow up, hey, you got to make some serious decisions and stop and frisk. I'm all for it.
Okay. Thank you so much, Walter. So, you know, let's talk about that. That's a very, very difficult issue for, you know, African Americans, when you talk about historically, particularly black men and other, you know, people of color in this community. But then, you know, Eva, you have black communities who want safe communities. They want to be able to sit out front. They want to be able to have barbecues and their kids to walk to school and do all of these other things. And if these things are happening in their community, they are not only the victims, but unfortunately, they may be black people, often the perpetrators. And what Walter is saying, that there may need to be aggressive tactics to keep communities safe.
I hear Walter's concern, and that is the rationale that Mayor Bloomberg gave for the policy. But I think the trauma, the collective trauma of so many black men who were stopped and frisked throughout the duration of this policy far outweighs the sort of the rationale for security that was used. And that cannot be changed. I mean, the stories that we have to this day of the policy and how it impacted in an entire generation is truly significant. But there are other ways that we can have safe communities. There are a myriad of social justice organizations doing this work, and we can be perhaps more creative in a way that we get to that resolution of both. Of both respecting black and brown men and also maintaining a level of safety.
So how does that fit with two very, very high profile black female mayors, Stephanie Rawlings Blake in Baltimore, who has endorsed Michael Bloomberg? And then you have Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., on the day that Bloomberg was here, she was asked about that. Mm-hmm. And her response, and I'm paraphrasing here, she said just what you said about the impact on she's speaking specifically of black men, and the impact on black men. But then it's almost like, well, you know, however, comma.
Mm-hmm.
Where she said, but she also understands the position of a mayor trying to keep a city safe. Is that talking out of both sides of your neck? Is that the real balance that Mayor Bowser, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and other black people who are interested in a Mike Bloomberg have to wrestle with?
Well, I think the reason we see Bloomberg disproportionately getting support from black mayors versus other candidates getting support from black congressional members really has to do with people who are close to the ground and to certain issues. And for black mayors, the issues that they are confronted with are these daily, as you point out, issues around safety and just people being able to live and thrive in their community. The problem I see, though, with these debates is that last night's debate, like some of the others, there's a clear winner. And that winner is Donald Trump, because they have 2 hours to talk about these really important issues. And instead, what we get is jockeying for positions relative to them getting elected. So having a good debate about how do you deal with safety on the ground in these communities really is important. And you've got mayors, you've got congress members, senators, you've got people up there, but that gets lost because it devolves into sniping at each other, looking for home runs and getting away from substantive discussions about these kinds of issues.
I want to talk about that. I want to ask Rena about that specifically. You know, Rena, there was so much sniping on stage during the debate last night, and I was listening to it on the way home, and I'm yelling at my, it was on CBS last night. I'm yelling at my app when I'm driving, you know, shut up. Let this person talk. Let Biden talk. Let Warren talk. Let Sanders talk, you know. And did they defeat the purpose of getting a message to black voters with all the sniping?
Oh, without a doubt. That debate last night, overwhelmingly, I think anybody I've spoken to inside or outside the Beltway just said, what kind of debate was that? It was a very, very poorly run debate, in my opinion. CBS did not do a good job in that they were going for high theatrics. They were looking to have a very sensational, bombastic show because of ratings. They want high ratings. They want there to be lots of, you know, chit-chat after each debate. And that really puts the voters at, you know, that deceives us. If anything, that really doesn't give us a fair shake at who could be our next leader. Let's be honest here. What it was they could have cut off the mics for one person as another one had the floor. They could have given people more than 20 seconds to respond to a question. They could have had people not raise their hand like children when they wanted to be called upon. I mean, these were some of the things that they could have done. I don't believe the moderator did a great job. And I think, again, I said this earlier, the number of debates, this is putting the American public at a disadvantage, because what it's doing is creating this culture of hate. And, you know, there was civility in politics not long ago.
What do you mean by that? Let me stop you there. You said a culture of hate. What do you mean by that?
You know, what they're really doing, the media, is playing up, and I want to say mainstream, and they're playing up the differences between these candidates when they really should be highlighting kind of how they all want to get to the same thing, a more fair America. And that's why I submit to you, to tie in a point that was made earlier about the younger black segment of voters. The younger black segment wants a more fair America. They hear the word fair used by Sanders and Warren quite a bit. They hear free college. They hear things that frankly try to right the past and wrong injustices that have happened. And I think these past wrongs trying to be righted by these candidates are all trying to be done in just a subtly different way. But by pitting candidates against each other, by saying Klobuchar just hates Buttigieg because of the way she looked at him and the way they interact, this is not helping the state of politics in this country. It's not bringing our society together. It's further dividing us, and it's creating a very polarized culture where it's really making it okay for us to hate our neighbor instead of love our neighbor.
Eva, you want to say something?
Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, who has become a surrogate for Bernie Sanders, very vocal supporter of him, suggested that the debates be themed, be around issues, policy issues. So one immigration debate, one climate change debate. And the DNC has pushed back against this. Others have as well, saying maybe the American people don't have. The DNC hasn't said this, but I've heard people say that the American people doesn't have stamina for this kind of very hyper-focused debate. But I think it might be helpful. I think it's a good suggestion.
We've seen that before. That's not a new idea. Mm-hmm. So why isn't it happening now?
Yeah. I mean, it would add a lot more substance and get people to really make decisions based on policy.
But isn't seeing the differences, comparing and contrasting the candidates, whether it be on race or gender or international relations or domestic issues, isn't that the very nature of politics?
Except that's not what's happening at the debates. If that's really what they were doing, they would really have value. The other problem with the way the debates are carrying themselves out is that one of those individuals is going to be the Democratic nominee. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is providing a boatload of assaults and attacks on that candidate that are going to show up in Trump campaign ads starting next month. And so they're really shooting their foot off by creating an atmosphere where there's a no-holds-barred attack on each other. And I'm not sure if the DNC leadership or the candidates themselves, but there needs to be some stepping back and not losing the eye on the prize, which is win in November by uniting the party.
Well, here's an example, I think, of what you're saying, Professor. I want you to hear what Elizabeth Warren was saying on the issue of housing.
It is important to recognize the role that the federal government played for decades and decades in discriminating against African Americans having an opportunity to buy homes.
That is a huge deal. It is an historic issue, and it is a today issue. It is an hour ago. It is a minute ago. It is happening right now, whether you are right. in South Carolina, whether you are in Washington, D.C. And I think that, you know, Warren brings home, the issue about racial disparity. She was specifically talking about, Bloomberg and housing. And here's Biden on the issue of equality. And then I'll let you all react to this as well.
And that's why we double the amount of money that is available for young entrepreneurs, and Black entrepreneurs are as successful as any other group of people in the country.
See, there you go. Again, message to the Black voter. Rena, your thoughts about those past two comments from Warren and Biden?
I love them. I think it's always really difficult to get your point across in such a short amount of time, but they both nailed it. They both directly spoke to the heart of kind of what bothers a lot of Black Americans. Housing, come on, let's be honest. How many years has it felt that no politician from the federal level has addressed that? And you can put Dr. Ben Carson as the head of, HUD, but what has that done? Frankly, nothing. And that was, if anything, that was probably one of the most offensive things. So I thought that was brilliant by Warren to bring that up. Biden addressing that sort of access to capital and propping up the Black entrepreneur. I'll tell you, I'm a woman of color, a young entrepreneur of many years now, and it is a different stack of cards that is stacked against any person that is of color and an entrepreneur in this country. And so I very much appreciated that, because we have some really fantastic Black entrepreneurs from coast to coast in this country that deserve really to be talked to in that manner, to be heard and say, they have value. We all have value. And the system has just not seen our worth.
Are you sure you're a conservative? I don't know what I'm hearing over there. I don't know what I'm hearing over there, Rita. But Eva, your thoughts about those past two comments?
Yeah, I think that focusing on policy will be more effective for all of these candidates. It also helps them show contrast with President Trump, making specifically government systems more just and equitable is, I think, a cornerstone of the Democratic Party, is of Democratic values. And that is a real contrast with Republicans, who want less government, right? They want less government. So if Democrats outline how they want to reshape these government systems to work for Americans, I think that is their most effective pathway to showing contrast with the Republican Party and President Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think every answer should begin with, this is what President Trump is doing to you in this area. So when you talk about housing, Ben Carson wants to triple the cost of rent for people in public housing, right? When you kind of go line by line through the different areas, I think that's really helpful for people to really see what's at stake, and that whoever wins, you have to get behind, because there's such a danger from not just President Trump, but the Republicans overall, and they're enabling him to carry out these particular policies.
Well, I'm going to do something that was not done very well last night. Each of you gets 30 seconds to respond. your final thoughts about last night, Rena?
I was very disappointed by last night. I expected a better debate in South Carolina. I expected the candidates to do better. I think some held their own. Certainly Biden didn't do any worse than a previous debate, but I don't think he did that much better. Mm-hmm. I want to hear something that is so different, that tackles the most eccentric, the issues of the day, like climate change, foreign policy, and most importantly, taking out Trump because he was the one person that made me want to abandon the Republican Party. And I registered as a Republican at the age of 18, and I'm still under 40, but Trump has not been a Republican. He never was, never will be, but he has hijacked the party. And so it's up to Democrats to bring in people like myself and independents and say, listen, we're going to give you somebody that's going to take America to a place that it frankly may have never been, a place which is as great as our Declaration of Independence says and our Constitution says.
Dr. Lusain, real quick.
Yeah, I think the debates going forward, if they're going to do any, but the campaigns in general are need to begin to address how are you going to bridge the divides that exist within the Democratic Party right now. How do you take the progressive side and the moderate side and begin to find those areas that can be the most effective in mobilizing people to come out in November? Because right now, as it's being shaped up, it's creating an atmosphere where neither side is going to vote for the other side.
Even.
You know, at times it felt desperate. It felt like the candidates were desperate to be heard, desperate to make their case. And I think that is how we've structured this entire contest as a society, to put so much pressure on these early states in terms of fundraising, where some people haven't even been able, many people haven't even been able, had the opportunity to weigh in yet. And some of their favorite candidates have had to drop out. But let's not put too much weight in this so early on. South Carolina is the first time that we'll hear from black voters in a significant way, and perhaps that's more instructive of what's to come.
Yeah, but Super Tuesday's just around the corner.
That too.
There we go. Well, then there's that. Dr. Clarence Lusain, Eva McCann, and Rena Shaw, thank you all for showing up and participating in this great conversation. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network.